my message to people that want to cause and commit grief via knife crime. Don't do it. Don't do it. You do not understand the reality of what comes from making a decision inside, mentally, physically, from what comes from that. Just making that split decision to pick up a knife and just stab someone however many times you feel is necessary. Oh, I stabbed him there. I didn't think I was going to kill him because it's this part of the body or it's that part of the body. You're carrying a knife and you're plunging that into somebody's fucking body. And you think that that's not going to kill someone. You spent your whole life using a knife and fork to cut up meat, to shove in your mouth and just eat. What makes you think the knife that you're using, plain standard dinner knife, that's tearing through meat to shove in your mouth, ain't going to have a consequence when you pick up a sharp one to stuff in someone's body? This might sound a bit raw, but today is the four years today I lost my brother because someone decided to stab him. Four people decided to attack my brother and stab him and take his life. Well, congratulations, you fucking scumbags. Congratulations. You'll now rot in jail for most of your life. Worth it, isn't it? That was worth it. Because I'm pretty sure that you're sitting in your cells. I hope you're sitting in your cells and my brother's face is one that you remember every night before you go to sleep. Because you do not deserve to live in peace. You deserve to be haunted for the rest of your living days with my brother's face when you decided to make the decision to take his life. My message today on the anniversary of my brother is just to try and raise awareness and to allow you all to understand the devastation that comes from the slight impact thinking that you guys are doing on the street today. My brother lost his life at 5:30 in the afternoon on one of the busiest roads in Ipswich. And it was really hard to get people to come forward, to stand up and be human. How disgusting is that? That people would rather go about their normal day. But it's amazing how many people want you to step up for them when one of their family members have been stabbed or they've lost a life or they know somebody. It's amazing how many people cry out for help to all of the ghosts walking the streets that choose not to pay attention because it doesn't affect them. But what you don't understand, it is affecting you because we're a community. Everywhere you live is community based. And without people standing up to put a stop to knife crime, this is going to happen daily. And it's only going to be a matter of time before one of you, people that don't think you're involved in a lifestyle, will lose someone you love. Believe me, I did not think for 1 minute the toughest man that I ever known in my entire life would have been a victim. Not for a second. Our world as a family fell apart. I can't even explain the pain that we're all in. Every single anniversary, every single birthday, every single family meeting. My mum's front room used to be a room that we all used to be able to relax in as a family. Big family I've got, and we all used to be able to relax in it. Now, it's a shrine. We can't go in my mum's front room without feeling the pain. There is pictures, canvases all over the wall. Flowers, candles. You know, you spend so much time trying to make a reputation on the street to stand out and be the baddest that you could be. When you're using your weapons, you ain't bad. You're just a coward. A coward that's too afraid to get their ass whooped and to stand up and do it again over. Because it's important for you to look tough. But you see what happens when you're on the street and you might be the toughest man in a group of 10 people. But you see, when you're the same, you're the same as the 2,000-3,000 people that you're going to be spending the rest of your life with in jail. That's a different story. That is a different story. Because you might walk down the street and someone might be scared of you on the street. But when you go to jail, ain't no one scared of you. You understand? You spend the rest of your life with other killers. Tell me that don't play on your mind when you're in a sweatbox. When you've just been sentenced to 20 years, 18, 20, 25 years, and you're in that sweatbox on the way to jail, your reputation's nothing. It's nothing. Because you see people outside on the street, you think anyone's going to remember what you are or who you think you are. You're going to be out of sight, out of mind for the next 20, 25 years. There's going to be no memory of you other than pain that you've left behind. For what? For what? The day I found out 4 years ago today, the day I found out that my big brother was dead, was 10:30 at night time when we found out. I was in a petrol station, just paying for my petrol, and I had the most horrendous call, and it was my mum. And I'd never heard her sound or cry like that in my life. My mum's a tough girl, a real tough girl. And when I answered the call and I heard her screaming in ways I can't even explain to you, the noises that was coming down my phone. Calm down, calm down. What's going on? What's the matter? They got him. They've got him. They got my baby. What do you mean? Now, I'm getting this information in front of a complete stranger. I'm standing in front of the guy that I'm about to pay for my petrol. What do? I run out. I need to get to my family. He's dead. Somebody got him. I tried to reassure her and say, Mum, it's not. It's probably like someone's just saying stuff, you know? Like, he's all right. It's Dean. The toughest guy I ever knew. She said, no, it's definitely him. They got him. She's crying, like, just crying. I can hear it. I can envision her, the pain that she's going through. How do you know? How do you know that it's Dean? How do you know he's dead? The police are here. When she said that, I knew that was definitely him. I froze. The guy in the petrol station is trying to tell me the price of the petrol, and I'm on the phone, and he's like, sir, you need to pay. And I'm looking at him thinking, he hasn't got a clue. And He hasn't got a clue, like, the pain I'm now feeling. Like, it's nothing. And the world just carries on going. It's flowing, like, everyone's walking the same pace. Everyone's talking. I leave the petrol station. As I'm leaving the petrol station, there's people pulling up in their cars. None of them have a clue, like, what's just happened to us. My world has come to a standstill. It's stopped. And for them, life just carries on. That split second, I envied every single one of them people that had a smile on their face. I envied every single one of them. Because I knew that it was going to be a long time before I saw that ever again on my face. I'm walking back to the car. I'm still on the phone. The guy's on the speaker in the petrol station. So you must get off the phone. You must get off the phone. I turn around and I look at the guy. And I just look at him. And I'm thinking to myself, can you not see I'm in pain right now? Can you not see that I can't put the phone down because my mum has just had her son murdered? I have just had my brother murdered. But he couldn't. He couldn't see the pain. Because how could he feel how I was feeling? Through just looking at me. I'm a stranger. I get in my van. I tell my mum I'm on my way. I don't actually know what I'm doing. I'm trying to find my keys. I'm trying to put them in to start my car. My foot's on the throttle, revving the engine, and I'm like, not knowing what I'm doing. I've forgotten how to drive. I take a deep breath. And I take one of the longest journeys I've ever took in my entire life. And I leave Ipswich and I drive towards Felixstowe. It's 13 miles. But it felt like 300. I'm about halfway down. I'm driving. I'm making calls. I'm ringing up. Dean's dead. Dean's dead. Everyone's in shock. Like, everyone's like, what do you mean? I don't know. I just know that Dean's dead. He's been stabbed. I need to get to mum's. And then I hung up, just randomly, just ringing friends and family, just telling them, just trying to get my message across. Like, I scream. I've got the steering wheel and I'm screaming. I scream so loud. It's for so long. I'm on the motorway driving, screaming. I screamed, just, my screams were so, like, angry and hurt and sad that I started feeling lightheaded whilst I was driving. I nearly passed out. I need to get to my mum. I'm worried because I know that that night, this day, 4 years ago, I nearly lost my entire family. I pull up outside my mum's house. There's police all there. I take a slow walk up the path because I know what's waiting for me. I know what's waiting for me. I walk into the kitchen. Everyone's crying. Two police officers standing in the kitchen. My mum screaming upstairs, smashing the house up. No! No! Screams that are... I can't explain to you the noise that was coming out of my mum's mouth. She hears my voice downstairs. I'm telling the police, is this true? You definitely got the right man. This is definitely my brother. The police officer at the time, Pauline, her name was, she said, Paul, it's definitely him. I didn't want to believe it. I didn't want to believe it. My mum comes downstairs, comes into the room, grabbing hold of me, hits me. They've got him. Hit me on the chest, you know, just grabbing my clothes. Because she's in so much pain, she doesn't know what... She doesn't know what she's doing. She's just lost her son. And I lost my brother. I've never felt anything like this before in my life. And all I could think about was revenge. I wanted revenge. The people that took my brother's life are going they're going to die. I'm going to hunt every single one of them down and I am going to take their life. All thoughts that I had running through my head while standing there in the kitchen, listening to my whole family screaming and shouting. I had to ring up my brother's children and tell them that their dad was dead. I got family in the kitchen screaming, crying. A mum suffering like I've never heard anyone suffer before in my life. I'm on the phone. I've got his children crying. His baby mum's crying. I was the one that had to give the news. Every single one of them. Once I've sorted everything out in the house, I give everyone a kiss goodbye. Because to tell you the truth, I didn't know if I was coming home. I got in my car and I went looking for the people that took my brother's life. And I rang up everyone I knew. Or should I say, people was ringing me left, right and centre. And what are you doing? Don't do nothing stupid. Don't do nothing stupid. I said, I'm going to do what I've got to do. So I'm on my own. And I'm looking for four murderers. Four people that decided to change my family's future for the rest of their lives. Four scumbags. Absolute filth. I'm on the hunt. The police are now on me. They're on me because they know what I'm like. They know that I'm not just going to lay down and accept this. And in my head, they had every right to be on my case because what they thought I was going to do, I was going to do. So now I've got family that distraught me on the hunt for revenge and the police trying to solve this case and stay on top of me at the same time. I realise now that the things that I'd done in place or diverting from the police to revenge my brother probably was a lot more hassle, but it did kick him in fast because every time, 7 days I was gone from my family whilst hunting for these people, and I was all day, all night, 7 days non-stop, no food, no nothing, just on one massive mission to fucking get these people, because that was my thoughts at the time. These people have to die. Day two of losing my brother, the next day, the pain from losing him hit home even harder, because my mum's husband, our stepdad, he ended up having a stroke because of everything that happened. And at the same time, we're on suicide watch for our mum. So you can imagine everything that's going through my head at the minute. Like, my brother's dead. My mum's on suicide watch. My sister's on suicide watch. And my stepdad has had a stroke. And I'm on some wild one trying to get to the bottom of what's gone on. The police come and spoke to me quite a few times. And I know who the police went and spoke to. A lot of people come forward from the streets, who were about the streets. They come forward to let me know that they had nothing to do with it and gave me information on who it was that did it, because they knew that I was on a mad one, and I was fixing to anyone that was involved with my brother's murder was gone. And there's a lot of people that were out there that come to me first to tell me they had nothing to do with it. And I respect them for that. But I did also warn them, if it did have anything to do with it, there was going to be trouble. And the people that come forward that had nothing to do with it, I respect them for the help. And respect them for coming forward to tell me. A lot of people stayed away because they didn't want to get pulled in on it. And I get it. I get it now. At first, I didn't get it. Four people were later on arrested for my brother's murder. And they put it down to the fact that my brother was there to rob them, which later on in court was proven that he wasn't. So the truth on why they killed my brother is still a mystery. Four years later, my mum is still on suicide watch. My family is still on eggshells. And we ain't the same as what we used to be. We ended up going to court. The trial was 4 months. 4 months long, every single day. At first, I wasn't allowed in the courtroom because they was worried that I might have jumped the dock or that. There was police presence like you wouldn't believe. Like I was the criminal. Like me. I weren't allowed to sit in the waiting room in case I saw someone and I lost it. They gave me my own room. And at first I didn't realise what they were doing, but they kept me occupied. I was doing puzzles and stuff. So the police were buying me puzzles to try and occupy my mind and to focus on what's like in front of me rather than what's around me. And do you know what? It worked, but it didn't. You understand? It's a hard one to explain. But when you're sitting in court, waiting to go into the room to face the people that you've been trying to face since the night it happened, to not be able to do something to get them, was hard. It was hard. But I knew that this was the right way. I knew that them in the courtroom getting 20 years, 18, 20 years, serving full sentences before they even can apply for parole. Rejection from appeal 3 times. 3 of them got 18 years. And the one that they say actually used the knife got 20. For that split second, that brought us justice. When they was given a sentence, we was like, yes, yes. But at the same time, whilst we was excited that they got 20 years, 18 years, these young men behind us in the dock was a family. The family of one of the boys that was in the dock. He was part of it. And we was yes. And they were distraught. And I thought to myself, how fucking rude. How rude are you crying? They took my brother's life. You're fucking disgusting scum. But we as a family didn't lose just a brother that day. A son, a dad, a granddad. The families that were in the dock, they lost a family member too. And I know a lot of you people might listen to this and go, fuck them, they're the ones that did it. But the family weren't the ones that did it. But when I was there in court, it was them. But the more I thought about it, that we weren't the only victims of this crime. We weren't the only victims. There was other families that had suffered as well. The families that came to Crown Court to see the sentencing was really quite respectful towards my mum and to the rest of us, to be fair. After the sentence was given, I got took away by the police because they were worried what I was going to do. And I'm not sure who it was, but the young lads that were there, they went up to my mum and they said to her, "Sorry for your loss." At first, I didn't know what to think about that. But that's when I started realising that it wasn't just us that lost people. It was families, generations. Some of these young boys, by the time they get out of jail, they're not even going to be able to have children, have a relationship. That's the next generation gone, dead. For what? For 5 seconds. For 5 seconds, you have completely wiped out one generation. We might have got justice for my brother, but we didn't get closure. I guess the reason why I'm telling you guys this today on the anniversary of his death is because I'm hoping that it sinks in that you are not the only people that's affected by this. The people that brought you into this world, your mum, your dad, if you've got siblings, brothers, sisters, children, you don't just mess up your life. You don't just take somebody else's life. You mess up everyone else around you. And whenever you hear daily, you go on social media and things like that, and you always sit there and you hear, stabbing in London, stabbing in Manchester, stabbing here, stabbing there, stabbing in Ipswich. You never ever hear anything after that. Oh, man of 20 with a 16-year-old that's been arrested. And these ages are just getting younger and younger, and you don't realise, but you're fucking your life up, man. And then you hear that girls are even taking part in this as well, and you're just like, what is going through your mind? What is going through your mind? Why do you want to take this path? And for what? Don't let yourself hear your mum cry in a way that you will never be able to unhear it ever again. Don't be the reason that you have torn families apart forever. Don't be the reason that you are the one that chose to destroy and take someone's baby. Don't be the one that picks up that knife in the morning and puts it in your trousers to use to settle your disagreement. Don't let it be you. Because I promise you, the outcome from this decision that you make quickly will not just end your life, but it would end everyone that is involved with you. Right back to the deepest core. My message to you is, please put down a knife. Save your life and everyone else around you before it's too late. And the person's life that you take is the last face that you see when you go to sleep and the first one you see when you wake up. And stop thinking that every one of you is untouchable. Because like I said in the beginning of this video, my brother was the toughest man I'd ever known in my life, the strongest. And it hit me hard when I found out that some scumbags just easily took his life for nothing. I'll be doing a few more videos like this just along the way, just to help get the message out there. But please share this video. Help me spread the word in the pain that's being caused from families after knife crime. Because there is no support for people like us. There is none. None whatsoever. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Stay safe and think before you pick up a knife. It's not worth it. It's not worth it.